So we're beginning the last section of the Catechism, which is on prayer. It's quite a beautiful section, really. And this morning I'll be covering those parts of the Catechism which are on the introduction to this. And the first, it's quite good and it helps us put ourselves in a perspective. The first number is number 2558 of the Catechism, and I've just repeated it for you there. It reads, "Great is the mystery of faith." The Church professes this mystery in the Apostles' Creed, and in brackets, part one. We did that earlier. It celebrates the mystery in the sacramental liturgy, and that's part two of the Catechism, which we've also done. Why? So that the life of the faithful may be conformed to Christ in the Holy Spirit to the glory of God the Father. And that's part three, which we've just concluded. And the number goes on and reads, "This mystery then requires that the faithful believe in it," part one, "celebrate it," part two, "live from it in a vital and personal relationship with the living and true God," part three. This relationship is prayer. That's quite a beautiful initial summary. Prayer is our relationship with God, which is what it's, the whole thing is geared to, that communion with God, which will be our topic for the next eight weeks. So what is prayer? And we're dealing with those early numbers of this section. The Catechism refers to, quotes rather, Thérèse of Lisieux. And she said to this, quite a simple, lovely statement of prayer. "For me," she said, "prayer is a surge of the heart. It is a simple look turned towards heaven. It is a cry of recognition and of love, embracing both trial and joy." That's in her Story of a Soul. While I was away last week at a clergy conference, which was actually on the priesthood, I think it was there, one of the priests was just telling me a story of this person that used to come into church quite frequently, poor person, simple man, no education much, and just a simple person. And he went, the priest went up to him one day and said, what are you doing? How do you pray? And he said, I just look at him and he looks at me. Which is kind of perfect, really. So prayer is just being in, like you did with your little children when you had them and they were babies and couldn't say much. You just looked at them and they looked at you and you bonded with them. That's prayer. You can say things if you want to, if you need to, but probably, as in love, maybe silence ultimately is the deepest communion. So words aren't what we're talking about. We're talking about communion, being in communion with, and taking time to not get too busy, so that you're in a space where you let the communion happen. Teresa of Avila speaks of prayer, and I'm quoting from her life, so we're going back to the 16th century now. "Prayer is an intimate sharing between friends, taking time frequently to be alone with the one who we know loves us." We know loves us. See, it's knowledge, but of course knowledge comes from a lot of places. Some knowledge comes from experimental investigation, and you know something that no one else might know because you've done the experiment, you know. You know how to get this, what's it called, to Mars, and you got there, because you knew, I wouldn't have a clue, and you wouldn't have a clue probably either, but some do, because they've done that study and the learning, and a lot of you know a lot of things that the rest of us don't know because of your concentration and so on. That's obvious. But please remember that nearly everything you know, I would hesitate to come up with something like 95% of what you know. You don't actually know because of what you've done. You actually believe it. You believe it because you've got an atlas and it tells you that Mozambique is somewhere on the map. So you know where it is because you trust the map, and that's a reasonable thing to do. And most of our knowledge is based on information we've received from others whom we trust. Sometimes we prove our trust wrong. The atlas may happen to have a mistake in it. Unlikely, but can happen. So that's not. So what we're talking now about a knowledge that's based on faith. A knowledge of the heart. A knowledge because we've made a choice to believe. It is a choice. And when we make the choice to believe because we've watched our father pray or our mother pray or sister, someone who taught us at school pray or whatever. So we do it. And we find that it actually something happens. It's communion. We've learned something through that trusting step. So that's what she says. It's something we know God loves us, but we know for the reasons I've offered you. She also says to us, advising us about prayer, look at him, she writes. He never takes his eyes off you. That's extraordinarily beautiful, isn't it? To think that God, whom we can't conceptualize, and when we do, our concepts are always a bit wrong, but we try and get a concept that heads in the right direction rather than one that hurtles us in the wrong direction, and we spend a lot of our life getting rid of concepts of God that are false, that we've picked up through faulty education. So our concepts are something, and they've got a value. Theology has a value, but finally it's a trusting thing here, I suppose, because Jesus believed it and knew it, and a lot of other people since have, and some of us have picked it up from them, and we know it's true. So God loves you, and she says, look at him, like that man I just told you about, who just looks at him, and he looks at him, and he's at home there. John of the Cross reminds us, in one of his statements, that the language that God hears best is silent love. I've put all that first just to clear the decks a bit, because there is a thing called prayer and there are things called prayers. And the prayers may help you pray or they may get in the road. I just came to my mind then my mother, who, there is a lovely prayer written by Charles de Foucault on, I can't remember it offhand, but it's on abandonment to God's providence. And my mother was, I think it was one of my brothers gave it to Mum, and she said, oh, I can't pray that, it's not me, it's too far away, you know. Like, so she didn't pray it, because to say that prayer wouldn't be real for her. But when she was dying, she prayed it every day. So it became real, and the words picked up something in her. Therefore, that prayer was really worth saying, because it was her prayer now. Do you see the difference? I'm sure you do. So saying prayers because they're in a book is not a good thing to do. Only say them. And God, I'm not advising you how to pray, but anyhow, only say them if they pick up. Because sometimes people can find words for what we're thinking, can't they? And we think, oh, that's what I was thinking. Or that's how I feel. Or that's. So if a prayer does that, oh, pray it. But don't go through a whole heap of prayers. And sometimes people leave prayers in the church outside, you know, in the foyer for people to pray. And I suppose I shouldn't take over, but someone has to be in charge. And I look at the prayer and I think, oh, my God, I hope no one prays that. So I take them away. Now, I might be doing wrong by that, but you can't just have the foyer littered with everyone's favourite. Oh, don't tell anyone in the parish I do this, will you, please? They probably already know. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't I forgot to show you what I was doing. They're the statements I just shared with you. Look at him, he never takes his eyes off you. So, beginning to pray. The people who write about prayer, the traditional people who know about it and write about it, they use terms that are quite faulty, but they're not bad as a beginning. They talk about active prayer, which I'll be spending most of the time on, and then they talk about passive prayer. Active prayer is the prayer that you can do. You can do it. Make sure it's real for you, but you can do it. Passive prayer is the communion with God that you receive. You can't initiate it, but you might receive it. And our prayer is obviously a mixture of both. So I'm talking here about active prayer for a while. And Teresa of Avila, one of the masters, the doctor of the church because of her teaching on prayer, you're always safe when you're listening to her. She says, each of us has a soul. But since we don't prize souls as is deserved by creatures made in the image of God, we do not understand the deep secrets that lie in them. A judgment that's perhaps unfair. Our culture, if that's what you could call it, on the whole, makes prayer quite difficult. It doesn't help prayer because it's too fast, it's too busy, it's too chonk, 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 chonk. It's too full of distractions. There's too many choices to be made on the whole. I would think, and I'm only guessing now because I've... Well, no, not quite guessing. When I was a boy, I went to a boarding school in the country at Douglas Park and enjoyed... There's something, isn't there, about a quiet evening or the bush, and some of you who come from the bush or somewhere where its nature is varied and tragic but also beautiful will know this better than I, but there's something about living in a city, in a busy street, that is not conducive to the human spirit. And if you happen to live in one of those high-rise chicken coops, which Canberra is pretty free of, really, but you look at some cities and don't they look and you think, those poor people, because you've got no silence, ever. Noise and... Anyhow, we've got this lovely thing called a soul. The best image I can get for it is when you talk about soul music. I think that picks it up. Sometimes music, soul music, picks up the rhythms of your inner being and you can dance to it, like the Afro-Americans seem to be in it. So our soul is our inner feelings, our deepest self, really. And it's quite beautiful what's happening in there, but you may not visit it for quite a long time because of the demands of life. I presume I'm not the only one in the room who sometimes feels out of touch with my soul. And I do at times and run a bit ragged, or if that's the word. And it's, we've got to keep connection with it. Teresa says again, the soul is a paradise where the Lord says he finds his delight. You mums and dads understand this, grandparents, and the rest of you too who aren't that, and I'm not that, so we all have a bit of an understanding. But you know the joy of delighting in a person, a spouse, a child, a parent, a niece, a nephew. And that delight, well, God has that delight infinitely, so we're asked to believe, and we see it in Jesus, so we know it's true, that God actually delights in all of us. Marvelous as that, almost unbelievable as that is. She also says, it, in its centre, very secret exchanges between God and the soul take place. But you mightn't hear them because you're too busy. I'm going to show off another language now, Japanese. I know about four words in Japanese. Kimono, geisha, is that a Japanese word? I shouldn't know these words, but I do. And there's probably sushi or a few words like that. But there's also another word, which I've nearly now forgotten. Too busy is the meaning. It's gone. There we are. I thought I knew it. I do know it, but it's somewhere in the aged memory. So anyhow, they have two characters. You know how the Japanese is characters rather than letters. So the images, in other words. And the two images for too busy are striking. Interestingly, I asked a Japanese person about it one day, and they didn't know. Till I saw it, and they thought, oh yes, you're right. But that's what we're like in English. You know how you use a word forever, but you don't actually look at it? And sometimes when you learn another language, you start to look at the word. I didn't know, for example, window meant the eye of the wind. Windoi. It's a bit of Nordic wind. We all know what wind is. And the French, you know, the Norman invasions, oi, the eye. So a window is actually where the wind looks in at the house and says, g'day, g'day. It's the eye of the wind. It's quite lovely, really. But you can have a bit of glass facing a brick wall and you call it a window. So no wonder we don't know what a window really is. And so on. Well, the two characters for isogashi, it's come, are heart, destruction. God, that's strong. If you're too busy, nearly everybody is in our culture. Too busy, your heart can be being destroyed. So, there's wonderful things happening in the heart or soul, but we mightn't be there to know them. Prayer is making space to be there. Even if you don't know what's happening, it is happening. So here's Teresa again, Teresa of Avila. Let us exert ourselves for the love of God. Let us abandon our reason, which can only go so far. Go as far as you can with your reason, but don't expect it to hold everything because it's too small an instrument, clearly. And abandon our fears into his hands. Let us forget our natural weakness that can take up so much of our attention. Care only about moving quickly so as to see the Lord. God, I wish I did what's written here. I mean, I do sometimes, but not as much as my heart says. I mean, you've got no idea what I'm thinking as I talk like this to you. I'm thinking, oh, God, that'd be good. I must do that, you know. But it's not that life takes over. All right. There's just some pointers, and I'll read what I've got here. I'm actually quoting from that marvellous book called Yielding to Love by Father Michael Fallon, which is, well, I thought I wrote it, I might as well quote from it. Here we are. So I'll quote, and you can, they're just the pointers here. Different religious cultures, check this for yourself, look to different people for their inspiration. In speaking of prayer here, I'm reflecting on the communion with God which I and others have experienced, inspired by what Jesus revealed about God as a God of love. So the communion we're talking about is that inspired by this wonderful Jesus. His revelation brought healing and meaning to many in the first century world, and when lived by holy men and women, it has continued to bring healing and meaning to people of all cultures ever since. Look at us all here. So we mustn't allow ourselves to be put off by those who claim to know God, but whose lives betray a distorted pursuing of power or a rejection of others whose search seems to them to take them along a different route. Why did I write that? Because I'm tempted to do that. Tempted to get angry with... angry, I get too... Oh yeah, I suppose it is anger, but, you know, with people who want everyone to be like them. So what am I doing? I'm wanting them to be like me. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit tricky, all this stuff. But, you know, you just see... And you do see so much hypocrisy, and you see out there... And then when you see it out there, you look in the mirror, and then you think, because... we're all human, so we don't want to be distracted by that, and I don't want you to be put off by the poverty of my prayer. We're looking at Jesus, you know, okay? He's the one to teach us. If we're going to be turned off by the charlatans, now some people are so obviously charlatans, it drives you balmy. It drives me balmy. And by the discovery of our own failures, we give up. And then we never pursue anything if we're put off by that. Let's rather be inspired by people whose lives are judged beautiful by any human standards, and let's join them in undertaking this most important of quests, prayer. And they're saints, teachers. I thought I knew a fair bit, and I did, I suppose, about Thérèse of Lisieux. But I grew up at a time when piety was a bit... And Thérèse of Lisieux seemed to be a kind of roses and petals, and you know. But then when you read her life, and when you read what she wrote, and when you read the whole thing, you realise, here you're dealing with a slightly neurotic woman, I would have thought. But are there women who aren't slightly neurotic? No, I don't mean that badly. I'm about to say, are there men who aren't slightly neurotic? What I mean is we're all slightly a bit. But I think she became, had a difficult family, and little girls, they came in hooking there. I'd be a fisherman, I'd do well. But what a wonderful intelligence and what a wonderful pursuit. And she got right to the heart of things, including prayer, separate from feeling and so on. So when you look at someone like that, I find myself inspired to follow and to realise that even someone as neurotic as I am can be a saint. Because you can be. When I get to heaven, find she wasn't neurotic at all. Anyhow, but I think she might have been. So to continue this quote, we would be foolish to overlook the sheer beauty with which the human race has been enriched by those who've allowed themselves to be caught up in the quest for the divine. Do you like Hopkins poetry, for example? Oh, there you've got someone who was also slightly, if not neurotic, perhaps manic depressive or something, like psychically there was a... But what a wonderful person who pursued things and found words that just inspire me anyhow, and no doubt a lot of you, with the sheer beauty of it all. And you think, what courage, you know, to do that when your psyche's a bit torn and mind's a bit bland compared to that. But you see that and you think, yeah, give it a go. And those who've expressed their communion with God in art of all kinds, especially the art of loving. Now we're getting real close to it. He could express it in poetry. But you know people, you probably are people, who actually have learnt a lot about the art of loving. That is the main art to learn in life. And we can all do it. So, someone was telling me only recently about a young person who had there was some mental problem, and their inability to speak. They couldn't speak. They could use words, I've got myself a little bit. But the point of the story was this: they could use words, but very slow intellectually, and you weren't sure you were being understood when you talked to this young person. And the person that told me was walking along with the child, was an auntie or an uncle or something, and the little child just said, I'll say Mary, give the name Mary to the adult, Mary feels really sad, but it'll be all right. And I thought, God, the little child picked up the sadness of the adult without words. So what's going, you know, we've got to watch how we, haven't we? Well, there's a lot going on in all of us at different levels, and you never know what people are picking. Sometimes a person who has inability to communicate verbally may be picking up a heck of a lot more than I am, because I'm distracted with words. Busy with words. So we treat everyone with utter respect, and we never know when a person comes... excuse me laughing at this because I think I'm heading this way, but a person who gets, what do you call that?
Alzheimer's
or something. Thank you for that word. What's Alzheimer's? Yeah, so a person, you know, and you may wonder what's going on, and there may be so much happening in the soul of communication at levels that can't be expressed. Wouldn't it be dreadful to speak about them in their presence as though they didn't hear you? And you know what I'm talking about, don't you? How sensitive we have to be. Yeah. So, people have learnt the art of loving. Every experience of love is a limited communion with God. Every experience of love. One prostitute helping another prostitute pay her bills has something to do with God and love, doesn't it? So, and whatever. So wherever there's love, there's God. So God is kind of everywhere. Where there's love, where there's not love, there's a barrier to God's presence. The experience of being awake and attentive to this communion is the experience that we're calling prayer. Everyone is praying. Everyone in the world is praying. Some don't know what to call it, but I bet they're praying. Since God is love, we can expect prayer to engage us in a love communion. That's what we can expect prayer to do. As long as you don't expect the love communion to be something that you feel. You do know the difference. Jesus on the cross, I don't know how he felt, but he probably didn't feel much energy that was what we'd call love. Because you can't do it when you're exhausted and in terrific pain and all that. It's just beyond you. But he loved because his words and his thoughts and his everything he did was loving. You know what I mean? So love's what you do. You may happen to feel, but you may not. I love this statement, I hope you do. It's Teilhard de Chardin. When I was a young man, I found most inspired. You've got to have someone who inspires you, and Teilhard de Chardin inspired me in the seminary. I couldn't get enough of him because he had a vision. Now, remember again, Teilhard de Chardin, nothing that he wrote was able to be published while he was alive. He was forbidden by his authorities to do it because it was a bit taking new ground. And one thing I love about Teilhard de Chardin is that he obeyed. But he kept writing. He kept doing it. After his death, whew, and I'm one of the ones that benefit from it. So he wasn't proudly determined to go. No, he was at the heart of everything. He obeyed. I don't know how to handle this, but he did. And I find that admirable, really. But he didn't stop producing. And God used it. To help me in here. Now, he wrote an article in 1934, he was a Jesuit paleontologist, called The Evolution of Chastity, and in it he has this wonderful stirring statement. And this is written in 1934, imagined it would be today, 80 years later. Someday, he said with great hope, after harnessing space, and we're doing a fair bit in that field now, more than then, the winds, you know, to tidal winds and electricity and try to harness it, the tides and gravitation, and we're getting better at all that. Someday, after we've harnessed that, we shall harness for God the energies of love. And then, and he's referring here to Prometheus, you probably know the myth, for the second time in the history of the world, we shall have discovered fire. Imagine if we could harness all the energies of love in this room. Jesus harnessed the energy of love of the 12 and their whoever else was in the group, and wasn't always terrifically successful in that, but on the whole he did. And so we're here, many more than 12, 2,000 years later, because the energy was there of love. It's quite amazing stuff. Well, there's Tyada saying, so I think that's what we all ought to be about, harnessing our own love and the love of everyone around us. We cannot hope to harness these energies if we're not in communion with God. Prayer is not an optional extra. It's the breathing of the soul. More essential to human living than the action of our lungs. It's in prayer that we'll experience the most satisfying of loves, in which the heart, capital H, of all reality speaks to our heart. And we've got to believe it's happening even if we're not hearing anything. Because you don't hear God. It is in prayer that we yield to love, hence the title of my book, Yielding to Love. We yield to it. We don't initiate it, but we give in and we say, oh, okay, God, love me. If that's all you said when you went to prayer, if you knelt down, if you can't kneel, sit, and if you can't sit, lie. If you can't lie, I don't know what you're going to do. You better find somewhere where you can kind of be in a position somewhere, and it doesn't matter what it is, hang, I suppose, you could hang. And if you said to God at the beginning of your prayer, love me, well, you can't resist. If your little kid comes up to you as a grandparent and says, love me, what do you do? First of all, you start to cry because it's so lovely to be wanting someone wanting your love. And then, of course, you love them. Well, God is love. Without the problems we have of whatever. It's in prayer that we learn to follow our yearning for deeper communion with God. That's what prayer is. Now, the Catechism, of course, is talking about Christian prayer. So we're looking at Jesus now, and we're realizing that in Jesus, the outer word, the word that God is speaking through creation, the weather, the beautiful Canberra autumn days, they're glorious, aren't they? Mm-hmm. If only we'd have more rain, but anyhow, they're just gorgeous days. And there's something in there that speaks to us of the mystery and the sacred. Well, Jesus is the most beautiful word God's ever spoken, because human beings are much more beautiful than weather. So you've got, and there you've got Jesus, the most beautiful human being. So you've got the word and the inner spirit. Jesus' spirit was the inner mystical communion, and the outer word came together in him, word and spirit, and they're in perfect harmony in Jesus' smile, his touch, his courage, his truth, his challenge, everything about him. In him we see God's love revealed in a human heart and a human life. In offering us his spirit, Jesus is offering us himself, and so a share in his own communion with God, his own prayer. That, I can't say anything more important than that in this introductory talk on prayer, that Jesus actually prays in you. That's the Christian life. It's good to really have it so clear. Jesus didn't say, pray like me. Jesus didn't say, I'm a vine, you be a vine too. He said, I'm the vine, you're the branches, stay with me and you'll bear much fruit. One of the fruits is prayer. So it's a mystical thought, but it's profound and essential to Christianity that it's Jesus' life in us. Paul says, I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me, he said. He was able to say it and people nodded because it was true of him. It's partly true of me, it's partly true of all of you. Maybe fully true of some of you, I don't know you well enough to say it. But the more we let go, the ego, and let God live in us. Well, Jesus' spirit is living in us through baptism, through our life. So it's his prayer that we're able to pray. So if you don't feel you can pray, ask Jesus to pray to the Father in you. In fact, Paul says that, doesn't he, in Romans chapter, when we don't know what to pray, the Spirit prays in ways that we just can't find words for.